Robert Casey was installed as Archbishop of the Archdiocese of Cincinnati on April 3rd, becoming the leader of Greater Cincinnati's 400,000 Catholics. Just weeks later, he joined the faithful in mourning the death of Pope Francis. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Archbishop Robert Casey joins me in this recorded interview to talk about the death of Pope Francis, the challenges facing the Church, and his hopes for the future. Welcome to the program, Archbishop Casey.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Great to have you here. Pope Francis appointed you as Archbishop of Cincinnati in February. What did Pope Francis mean to your faith?
He meant a great deal, because when he came out on that balcony and declared himself, you know, I'm the new Bishop of Rome, you could feel just the spirit in the man. And so as a priest at that time working in a parish, I was encouraged from the beginning by his presence and by his ability just to convey kind of the joy and hope that we are called to celebrate as a church.
I've heard his approach described as pastoral. Did you feel that from him?
He's very pastoral, yeah. I think he also has a depth that sometimes is underappreciated. And so my encounters with him, I've had the blessing of meeting him now twice. And in both encounters, just finding him to be not just a pastoral kind of heart man, but also a deep thinker. And just with a profound wisdom of life and kind of the truths that we seek to embrace in this world.
Yeah, powerful combination.
Yes.
What have you learned about what Pope Francis meant to the greater Cincinnati community? What are you hearing from congregants?
You know, I think it's always a state of uncertainty when a pope passes, because you're familiar. You know who the man is. And all of a sudden, the questions arise, what happens next? And so I think in my conversations with the people here in the Archdiocese, just to reassure people that the church continues, you know, that we've had, you know, more than 260 plus popes since the beginning, and we're still here. And so we place our trust in God to just kind of lead us through this moment and to help us discern who will the next leader of the church be.
How do you think about the way Pope Francis influenced the church as a whole?
I was reflecting on this, that I was looking at his papal motto, which he brought over from his episcopal motto when he was a bishop in Argentina. And so his motto is Miserande atque elegendo, having mercy in choosing him. And so I had never really dove into, okay, where's that come from? And, you know, it comes from a homily of St. Bede the Venerable, that St. Bede wrote about St. Matthew's calling, how Jesus had mercy on Matthew and called him. And this then speaks of the Pope's own experience. He had a personal experience of Jesus and experiencing Jesus's mercy and call. And then I think we see this translated then in the Pope's service to the church, giving his life over to the church so that others might also experience that mercy and find themselves called and chosen. And so I just think, you know, having become a bishop in 2018, you don't have much time to think about what will your motto be. It's kind of a, because it's not something you ever planned for, to be a bishop. And so when you receive that call into leadership as a bishop, rather quickly you have to come up with a motto. And I look at Pope Francis's motto and I say, this is a man who understood himself, but also understood his role within the church. And that kind of seeking to be a representative of God's mercy and God's love within the world. We see that just in his ministry through these years as Pope.
For listeners who aren't familiar with your story, tell us a bit about yourself.
I grew up in a suburb of Chicago, Alsip, Illinois. And so my entire life has been the Chicago area. And so coming to Cincinnati is brand new, getting used
great to... Great change, right?
So far, so good. Yeah. I've really enjoyed the move here. But I grew up in a very, very close-knit family. So I'm one of five children. My dad was an immigrant from Ireland who emigrated over here to the U.S. in his late 20s and met my mother and married and They had five children. And so I've been blessed in my parents, in my siblings. And I think that shapes kind of how I kind of interact with people.
I want to ask you then your thoughts about the declining number of people who are called to the priesthood. I mean, the Catholic Church has fewer people attending Mass, fewer priests to serve congregations. What do you think is behind that? Why do you think that's happening? And what do you plan to do to try to address that?
I think this is not something that has suddenly come upon us. That when we look at the journey of society in the world, we do see a movement away from institutionalized religion. You know, people that are comfortable being spiritual but not religious. And then even further, a move into secularization, which is just a complete, there's no room for God in this. God is a figment of our imagination. And so when we look at the journey of just society, it doesn't surprise us then that we see in our Catholic Church a decrease in participation, and that decrease then impacts how many people are becoming priests, how many people are seeking Catholic marriage. We see those numbers go down, right? And for me, it's actually, with the challenge comes a tremendous gift. And that gift is an ability for our church to really rediscover who we are. And I think this is what Pope Francis really strived to do with us. Our operations manual for these years that we've had him as Pope has been his encyclical, The Joy of the Gospel. So we need to be able to look at our Catholic faith and say, this gives me joy, and express that joy to the world. I need to look at my priestly vocation and say, this gives me joy, and express that joy to young men that might then consider being a priest. If I don't express that joy, if being a Catholic or being a priest looks like a miserable choice, nobody's going to come and join you, right? And so I think in these years, we've had an opportunity to really rediscover the joy of our faith and then share that. And so coming into the Archdiocese of Cincinnati, I see the work that has been done here through Archbishop Schnur to really promote vocations. And so we have a significant number of young men, again, not the numbers of the past, but we're not in the past. We're no longer in that age of Christianity. We're in a new moment here. And so in this new moment, I think I see our young people recognizing the joy and responding to it. We saw this just recently with the celebration of Holy Week, right? And our parishes saying, we had a good number of people come out for these events. And it's like, yes, because I think coming out of the pandemic, there is a greater hunger for relationship, a greater hunger for community, and also a desire for something more, something that gives us meaning. And so there's an opportunity here for our church really to express the joy that it is to have this faith, and then to invite people into relationship where they can experience that joy together.
I'm talking in this recorded interview with Cincinnati Archbishop Robert Casey about the challenges facing the church and his hopes for the future. I spoke with a woman priest shortly after the death of Pope Francis. She talked about how much she admired and respected the Pope, but how she and many other women wished that he had done more to allow for the ordination of women priests in the church.
What I like to point to is Pope Francis's work to increase the leadership role and the co-ownership of church. That is significant. And so, again, I think that's where the conversation begins, because ordination is not related to decision-making or authority. That decision-making, that authority is shared between clergy and laity. And so we see this in Pope Francis's work to refashion the curia, the kind of the structures at the Vatican, in inviting women into places of significant decision-making and authority. I just said to somebody last week, I said, Google Sister Raffaella. we see this. It was my experience working as Vicar General in Chicago. I was the number two to the Archbishop there. Well, alongside me was a woman, the Chief Operating Officer for the Archdiocese. And so I think that's really significant, because sometimes people will say that the church excludes women from decision-making and authority. And that has not been my experience, both as priest and bishop. In the parishes where I served as a pastor, I had teams that were mixed of men and women, pastoral councils that were mixed. And so I think we continue to find ourselves needing to kind of recognize how we all share in this co-responsibility for the care of our church.
Yeah. It's so interesting to hear you say that, because I think a lot of people who aren't part of the church maybe look from outside the church and see it as kind of hierarchical, where the priest is the boss and then the bishop is the boss of the priests and the archbishop is the boss of everybody. And all those positions are men in the church, but you don't see it that way? You don't see it as hierarchical in that way?
Of course, we do have the sacrament of holy orders, and that sacrament is restricted to men. But I also see just our day-to-day operation as church, how we make decisions, how we administrate this church that's in our hands at this present moment. And that's shared. That's the effort of all of us together. And I think that that's something that Pope Francis not only has called us towards, but also demonstrated in his own actions as the Bishop of Rome. How he defined structures there then impacts how we are called to define our structures outside as the Catholic Church in the world.
We'll continue our conversation after a short break, and later in the program, we'll talk about the statewide issue on Ohio's May 6th ballot. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our recorded conversation with Cincinnati Archbishop Robert Casey about the challenges facing the Catholic Church and his hopes for the future. The Archdiocese has the Beacons of Light plan to streamline operations and share resources, in part because of this diminishing number of priests who are available to serve congregations. Do you expect to follow that plan as it's been laid out? Do you envision any significant changes to the plan?
I think if we look at the church in Western Christianity, in Europe and the United States, we have had to learn to adjust. And I think as we've entered into this work of renewing the church today, initially, I think it does come out of kind of a focus on diminishment. And I think as we've lived into it, so I experienced this in Chicago with what we called Renew My Church, and I'm experiencing that here in the Archdiocese of Cincinnati with Beacons of Light. It's a shift from focusing on diminishment to focusing on strength and making sure that we're living out of strength and not out of weakness. And so there's two elements to that. One is structural, making sure that we're right-sized, making sure that we have created systems and structures that work for this present moment. We are not the church of the 19th century. We're not the church of the 20th century. We're in a new moment. And so we have to be able to, with fresh eyes, look and say, okay, what do we need in terms of our structures and our systems to operate in this present time? But it's not just structural. It's also spiritual, because that renewal, it goes to what I was speaking about with Pope Francis. It's understanding our own personal relationship with the Lord and then expressing that relationship to others. So I do see, yes, will Beacons of Light continue? Of course it will, because that's the mandate that has been given to the church today, is that we have to be able to adjust to the new reality, that we're no longer in this age of Christianity that so many knew before us. We're in this new apostolic age, this new moment for church that requires us to kind of make changes and adjustments to how we operate.
Are there ways in which your experience in Chicago is kind of informing your view of the plan here, the Beacons of Light plan here, or informing the way you help to implement it?
Again, I think hindsight is 20/20. So when I received the call from the Apostolic Nuncio in February to become Archbishop of Cincinnati, of course, you know, my head is spinning and I'm going, why Cincinnati? And now that I'm living into this, I do think that my work with renewal in Chicago is going to assist me here, because I've been a companion to a church in transition. I've been a companion in the moments of celebration, and I've been a companion in the moments of grief and loss. And so I do think that my experiences over the past several years in Chicago will assist both me and the people of God here, because it's not just about me. It's why has God placed me here? I look forward to being a good companion to the churches of this archdiocese, because I understand the challenges we're facing. I also understand the opportunities for grace and blessing that are before us. And so I want to assist us to find our way through the challenges and to really grab hold of those opportunities for grace and blessing.
Yeah. We've been talking about challenges. Clergy sex abuse is an ongoing challenge for the church and the families, of course, whose lives have been affected. You faced an accusation that you were cleared of years ago. Can you talk with us briefly about that chapter of your life and how it's affected your view of this challenge of clergy sex abuse in the church?
I think it's important to recognize that my vocation as priest comes out of the late 80s, early 90s. I was ordained a priest in 1994. Chicago was one of those places that in the early 90s was recognizing the need to address abuse. And at the time, Cardinal Bernardine, who had previously been here in the Archdiocese of Cincinnati, Cardinal Bernardine was taking on great grief from others saying, "What are you doing?" And yet Bernardine said, "We have to lift up the veil and bring light to this." And so that's been my experience as a seminarian and as a priest, is walking with a church as it goes through this moment of very difficult recognition and reconciliation. As a priest, walking with victims of abuse, again, not necessarily clergy sexual abuse in those days, but abuse happens in our families, in our schools, in our neighborhoods and communities. And all too often, it is swept under the rug. All too often, that family says, "We can't talk about this." Or that community says, no, don't go down that road. We can't look at this. And so where I have a gratitude is that when I look back over the past 30 years, I can see the work of the church to become a voice calling for change, calling for new processes, new abilities for victims to step forward confidently. Coming into the Archdiocese of Cincinnati, I was curious because, again, I'm coming out of my experience in Chicago, where I can go back to the early 90s and the work of Cardinal Bernardine, long before there was a Dallas Charter in 2002, when the U.S. bishops decided, you know, we've got to together make a statement. Chicago was in that work long before Dallas. And coming to Cincinnati and discovering that this archdiocese as well has been engaged in this work since the early 90s, that gives me hope, right? Because I see our experience as church over the past 30 years as an opportunity for us to really be a voice in society, because this is not just a clergy reality. This is something that exists within our families, our neighborhoods, many organizations. And so how can we as church assist the world around us to address abuse, to give voice to victims, and to create processes and systems that really safeguard our children and those that are most vulnerable among us?
Can you talk a little bit more about what you think the church can and should do specifically to the action that church leaders could take to prevent abuse, to stop abuse?
Within the church, again, we have created, you know, ways of forming our young people, forming our families for awareness. You know, when I go back to my childhood in the 70s, it was pretty weak. You know, the being taught, warned about Mr. Stranger Danger, and it was not really helping me in terms of being ready to recognize and repel any chance that somebody could abuse me, right? I look at the work that the church does now in our schools, in our religious education programs, to prepare our children, right? I look at the work that we've done with our employees, our priests and our employees, to make sure that they're formed with a set of eyes that can recognize the warning signs. Because, again, when we talk about abuse, those that are abusing are not looking to be very visible. And so you have to develop a set of eyes that can recognize those warning signs. And so we've put into you know, our HR policies? Would it we put into priest formation all this work around developing that eyesight that allows us to recognize something and then raise the alarm bells mm-hmm. and respond to it? And so, again, that's where I hope that the church can be a good companion to other agencies that to this day still, you know, have more of a blind eye towards this. And 'cause I think, again, this is, there's a misconception that, you know, that abuse is going to go away. It's a reality of our human family. And so we can't have this misguided belief that there will never be an instance of abuse, but we can safeguard against it, and we can assist those victims, survivors, to have voice and to find healing and reconciliation. And so that's where I really look forward to working with our churches in this continued work.
I'm talking in this recorded interview with Cincinnati Archbishop Robert Casey about the challenges facing the church and his hopes for the future. Your predecessor, Archbishop Schnur, told parishes last year to cut ties with the Girl Scouts. Some parishes have asked the Archdiocese to reconsider. Where does that whole thing stand?
Yeah. And to be clear, his letter to parishes was not so cut and dry to cut ties with the Girl Scouts. No, we're in relationship with the Girl Scouts. We have Catholic Girl Scouts. That's going to continue. And so there's not a desire for us to cut ties. But it is trying to come to an understanding of how do we work with the Girl Scouts? Because the partnerships that exist in the past, and again, because we have families, we're talking generations of Girl Scouts, right? It's right. Like my grandmother was a Girl Scout, my mother was a Girl Scout, and now I'm a Girl Scout. And so it's multi-generational. But the truth is, the same way that the church finds itself in a new moment, in this moment of secularization, we also find ourselves in a new moment of relationship, because the Girl Scouts, I would say, are not looking to define themselves as a Christian organization.
Mm-hmm. Right.
and yet in the past, they wouldn't have had a problem with that. In an age of Christianity, when everybody was Christian, everybody was belonging to a religion, they wouldn't have had so much of an issue of saying, we stand with a religion. Now I would say the Girl Scouts would say, we don't define ourselves by religion. And yet here we are as the Catholic Church saying, well, we still define ourselves by our religious beliefs, right? And so creating that partnership between Catholic Church and Girl Scouts is much more complicated than it used to be. And what I've spoken to since stepping in as Archbishop is just my desire to enter into this conversation, because I do feel that it is an ongoing conversation. It's a conversation that began many years ago, and it's a conversation that will continue. And part of that conversation is to, I think, provide some clarity that it's not a desire to cut ties. We're still looking to approve and recognize those girls in our parishes that are Girl Scouts and are receiving Catholic awards, because there are Catholic awards in Girl Scouts. We are looking to for ways that we can partner. But again, it's finding that understanding between us in terms of, well, you know, the Girl Scouts aren't going to say, hey, we're happy to define ourselves by you, Catholic Church. They're going to say, no, we don't want to be defined by the Catholic Church. And the same way the Catholic Church is going to say, well, we can't be defined by the Girl Scouts because our belief systems are so different. But we can find ways of partnering. We can find ways of being in relationship with one another. That's so important that we continue the conversation, that we continue to find ways to bridge the space between us.
We have just a couple minutes left, and I have a couple questions, so I want to see if we can cover them both. We spoke recently with former Ohio Governor John Kasich. He wasn't discussing Catholicism with us, but what he said was he had observed a number of pastors who were under pressure to kind of do politics from the pulpit. And Inquirer reporter Dan Horn reported about how the Cincinnati Archdiocese opposed the ballot measure to legalize abortion in Ohio. What, if any, role do you think the church has in politics and political issues?
When we discuss kind of the separation of church and state, the reality is that the church exists in the state. We don't exist apart from it. You know, we live in this world. And while my hopes might be set on heaven, I am not yet a citizen of heaven. I currently am a citizen of the United States. And so there has to be this relationship between the church and the state, between the church and the government. And how I would define that as a Catholic bishop is through the eyes of Jesus. So where I stand as bishop is not with a particular political party. No, I stand with Christ. And where I'm going to kind of place my vote and enter into the participation in society is through that understanding of what would Jesus do. And so, again, the church opposes abortion. So that's not something political for us. That's something that is rooted in our understanding of Jesus Christ, who we see as our leader, right? And so it's important for us to kind of be very clear in understanding that, you know, it's not about political party. It's about our understanding of truth and the world in relationship to Christ.
You're now the leader of Greater Cincinnati's 400,000 Catholics. We've talked about some of the challenges the church is facing. What are your hopes for the future, especially as the world waits for the conclave to gather to select a new pope?
Again, when I was first made a bishop in 2018, and it became very clear to me that the mandate for the church right now is Pope Francis's encyclical Joy of the Gospel, and that speaks to my heart. And so that is my desire, is that in this moment where we so easily give ourselves over to divisiveness and really, you know, disagreement and discourse that's harmful to our relationships, I want us to tap into some joy and to find, again, the ability to just relate to each other, walk with each other. It doesn't require us to be fully in agreement. Disagreement does not mean disrespect. And so I really hope that as a shepherd of this local church, I can be a witness to that ability to walk with and listen to and be a companion to those around me, so that together, again, we can find some joy in life, because this life of ours is such a gift. And so often I think we lose sight of the gift of life.
Well, I have been talking with Cincinnati Archbishop Robert Casey. Thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure.
Lucy, it's been a great pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Up next, we answer the question, what is Ohio Issue 2? This is Cincinnati Edition.